Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
People. I like to walk out, shake hands, move, look at people in the eye, see what they're thinking. It's really curtailed that ability on my part and everybody's part. And so, because there's a heightened notion that when you say there's nothing wrong with going to the Capitol.
The interview that Biden, President Biden, it's hard to think about which things he's now the former on, the former candidate, but now still the president, did with Lester Holt a week ago today, really, I thought, made it just about a certainty. We didn't get to cover this last week because, obviously, we're at the RNC and doing that all the time. But watching, you know, this was kind of like, what, the fourth, I guess, major step in the transition away from being the candidate. You had the debate, then you had the ABC News interview with George Stephanopoulos, where George did a very good job of pressing him repeatedly on his mental capabilities these days. Then you had the NATO press conference, at which it became painfully obvious, again, not quite as bad during the debate as during the debate, but it still became pretty obvious. And then this interview that he did with Lester Holt about a week ago really kind of shored up the observation that this is not the same man that you thought you had in the White House.
10, 12 agents in my house for 9 hours unaccompanied, going through every single thing I had. That's appropriate. And they looked at me and concluded I didn't do a damn thing wrong. But my generic point is that it's, the basis upon which the case was thrown out, I find specious because I don't agree with Clarence Thomas' dissent and or the Supreme Court decision on immunity.
I mean, he was all over the place. And it just made it so clear that what I had said before the RNC, which was that, you know, I couldn't say for certain, and I had never said for certain that he was going to drop out. But what did I say? I said, if he's going to drop out, they're going to wait till after the RNC to do it. Why? Because then the Republicans waste all of their time criticizing President Biden, and then he drops out, and that's all sort of wasted effort. If he had dropped out before the RNC, then they could have retooled entirely to criticize either generally the administration or Democrat policies or Kamala Harris or the variety of other people who might well, you know, now be candidates for this office. But it was so obvious to me that if he was going to drop out, that it would have waited until, you know, after the RNC was over. And then we got the COVID diagnosis. And unless you don't think there's any connection between anything in the world, you had to kind of believe, like, okay, COVID is going to be cover. You know, COVID is, I'm not saying that the diagnosis was false. It just seemed like, hey, if he's got COVID, it's a very easy thing to say. Well, he's got COVID. It's debilitating his health. He's discovered that he can't really do what he used to do. And so the follow-on announcement yesterday that he was dropping out of the race entirely came as just about no surprise to me. And I think to a lot of other people. Because the chorus of voices had grown and grown and grown and grown to over 40 legislators, and the donor classes you've heard repeatedly, just people in general saying this, you know, it's time for a change. And, you know, I think probably Yeah, I mean, Nancy Pelosi telling the New York Times that she wants a competitive process at the DNC. That's an open question now, whether Kamala Harris is going to be the nominee or not, obviously. And even when, like, Joe Manchin gets asked on both this week and also State of the Union yesterday. This is before he officially dropped out, right?
So let me ask you directly, do you believe President Biden should step aside as the party's nominee?
Martha, it's with a heavy heart I've come to a decision, and it's something I reflected on the last 3 weeks. And so with that, I come with a heavy heart to think the time has come for him to pass the torch to a new generation.
And he repeated that exact phraseology several times on both shows. It's time to pass the torch. It's time to pass the torch. And just to go back for a second to the Lester Holt interview, that's what he showed in that interview, is that it was time. It's not just sort of the mental flubs or the slowness or the... And look, I mean, I'm 53. I have times I forget things, okay? And I have times where what I used to be able to lay my hands on mentally in speaking about something isn't there quite as fast as it used to be. And I'll just be honest. I'm on the air for 4 hours every day. There is also a part of me that every once in a while I'm like, oh, man, I hope I get this one back on track. You know, like, that's normal. It's normal for an 81-year-old. It is. It's very normal. In fact, given the state of most 81-year-olds, he's doing pretty well. That was never the issue. The issue was never whether he's in good shape mentally for an 81-year-old. The question is he in good enough shape for a president or a candidate, right? That was the issue. And you started to see this different side of Joe Biden because he had kind of been the affable, genial, ha ha ha, my age, ha ha ha, I can't run the 100 meter in 10 seconds, you know, that kind of thing. He started to show anger at Lester Holt in this interview. And I thought that was kind of a turning point for his public persona.
In your last TV interview, you were asked if you had watched the debate. Your answer was, I don't think so, no. Have you since seen it?
I've seen pieces of it. I've not watched the whole debate.
And the reason I ask, because I guess the question is, are you all on the same page? Are you seeing what they saw, which was moments of, frankly, that appeared to be, you appeared to be confused?
Lester, look, why don't you guys ever talk about the 18 to 28 lies he told? Where are you on this? Why didn't the press ever talk about that?
They have many times, sir. But he's like irritated that Lester Holt's not doing a good enough job to cover for him. Like they've been covering for him for four years.
28 times it's confirmed he lied in that debate. I had a bad, bad night. I wasn't feeling well at all. And I had been without him making I screwed up.
And like I said, the developing irritation that he had with this question, that now you looking back, you think they were asking exactly the right question. And look, nobody likes to have their competence challenged. Nobody likes to be asked repeatedly to defend their basic ability to do something when they've done it their whole life. I'm sure. Look at how hard many of you have dealt with this. You know, you got parents or grandparents, you got to take their car keys away from them, right? Because they become bad drivers and dangerous drivers. Nobody looks at themselves and, you know what, it's time for me to give up my car keys. No, it's very hard to do, right? Nobody likes to be challenged on that. You get very defensive, and he got more and more defensive as this interview went on and angry again at Lester Holt for how dare you.
Just ask a question because the idea that you may or may not have seen what some of these other folks have seen, you're not on the same...
I'd have to see. I was there. I'd have to see it. I was there. And by the way, seriously, you won't answer the question, but why didn't the press talk about all the lies he told? Well, I don't know anything about that.
We have reported many of the issues that
no,
came up during
haven't.
That debate.
No, you haven't.
We'll provide you with them.
God love you.
Okay.
Yeah, and the laughter is a pretty angry laugh, if you ask me, but it's also, I don't need to watch the debate. I was there. Well, yeah, but you didn't understand what was happening, clearly, because your shock that people were shocked at how bad it was is shocking.
Who do you listen to on deeply personal issues, like the decisions whether to stay in the race or not?
Me.
Terrible answer.
Look, I've been doing this a long time. The idea that I'm the old guy, I am. I'm old. But I'm only 3 years older than Trump.
That's true.
Number one. And number two, my mental acuity's been pretty damn good.
But listen, Joe Manchin, who I haven't talked about this much yet today, but I think Joe Manchin is the strongest possible candidate the Democrats could run right now. He's not a Democrat as of May. He switched to be an independent. But I think he would win in November against Trump, frankly, for a lot of reasons. We'll talk about it throughout the morning. But Joe Manchin's 76. I mean, Trump is 78, right? I mean, 3 years is not that much. 5 years is not that much. It's not just the age. It's how you're doing at that age, right?
I understand why people say, God, he's 81 years old. Whoa. What's it going to be when he's 83 years old or 84 years old? It's a legitimate question to ask.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, with the vice presidential nomination of J.D. Vance.
Even though if you go back and listen to the things J.D. Vance said about Trump.
Well, he said some things about you, yeah.
Oh, no, he said something about me, but see what he said about Trump. What's with you guys? Come on, man.
See, as I say, there was this progression from incapable in the debate to not being able to give good answers to George Stephanopoulos to dramatically underperforming in the NATO press conference to being angry at Lester Holt in this interview, where the whole thing that he had to do with Lester Holt was just, you know, show you're competent, show you're capable, answer the questions. And instead he was angry, irritated, pushing back, saying things that just, I mean, made no sense at all in terms of what was going on in the world at that point with him.
Mr. Trump has said he's giving you a chance to redeem yourself, basically the idea of engaging in another debate.
We're going to have another debate.
Yeah, you're going to have one in September that's on the books. Would you be open to doing one in the, you know, the next few weeks?
I'm going to debate him when we agreed to debate, and I'm going to debate him in September.
But if the opportunity came up to do one between now and then, Is there a sense of wanting to get back on the horse?
I'm on the horse. Where have you been? I've done 22 major events, met thousands of people, overwhelming crowds, a lot happening. I'm on the horse.
Well, at that point, he was for another, 6 days, basically, at that point. 437-1620, 437-1620. So a variety of factors coalesced to make it, I think, unavoidable that he would make this decision. The only question was when, and the only other question, I guess I can't say there's the only question, but there's two questions. The only other question is then who is going to be the nominee? And obviously he has endorsed Kamala Harris. One just note on Kamala Harris is she was of the major candidates, like of the really capable potential candidates to be the presidential nominee in 2020, she was one of the earliest to drop out. She dropped out in December of 2019, receiving no primary votes she actually wound up getting a few, but she didn't get any, she didn't survive even to the primaries. And he picked her because she was a black female senator, right? That was just like he picked Ketanji Brown Jackson, because she was a black female justice. Now, that doesn't mean she's not competent. That doesn't mean she's not capable. It does mean that he picked her for those reasons. And so now you're in the very unusual position of the person the Democrats voted for, the Democrats, the party of the people, the party of the vote, the party of the we control things, the person they voted for is not the nominee anymore, won't be the nominee come the DNC in a couple of weeks. And how are they going to pick the person who actually does represent the party? Because they never voted for her. I mean, they voted for him and she tagged along, right? They never picked her. And so if there's this effort to shoehorn her in because, well, she's the vice president, it's not going to be a great look for the Democrats after already having gone through a kind of a soft coup. Right? Because he didn't want to leave, but the chorus of voices became so strong that he had to. And by the way, I don't know for sure what went on behind the scenes with him, but I will give the president credit. I think it's impossible for him to have been a candidate and won in November. Republicans at the RNC were like, we've won. I mean, it was a guaranteed. And now they've made it an open question. And so for him to step aside as a form of loyalty to country or devotion to country or sacrifice of self in an effort to make what he thinks is the better vision, I actually value that. I think it took a lot of guts to do that and took a lot of, self-assessment. Something changed in him that made him realize I can't do this anymore. And I think that's really hard and admirable, frankly, to see somebody make that decision. So I want to give him credit for that. And then the question is, well, should he stay in office the rest of the term? Open question. Rick Scott's calling for a 25th Amendment stuff. People are going to ask the question, what did Kamala Harris know and how long did she know it and what did she do to cover up the truth about it? I mean, we have all these questions, right? If he can't run for re-election, can he still run the country? I think there's a good point to be made that running a campaign is way more stressful than you think. And trying to be president and run a campaign is massively stressful. Maybe he's up to just being president and not president and running the campaign. I think you can make that argument. I don't know that it's true of him factually, but just in general. You could definitely make the case that somebody who can't run for re-election can still run the country. You can make that case cognitively, logically. 526 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Mex Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. At Costello's, they have all your summertime barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu Tomahawks, Wagyu Chuck Steaks, to Quarter Pound Colossal Wagyu Hot Dogs, Brisket Pork Butts, and so much more. And at Costello's, you will find all the best boar's head sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready for charcuterie boards to chicken salad, and of course, the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, fine wine and cheeses. Find them today at the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
Hello, I'm Jason English, candidate for Santa Rosa County Clerk of Court and Comptroller. The Clerk of Court is the hub of our justice system and vital to Santa Rosa County. I have 18 years experience as attorney to the clerk and former prosecutor. I'll protect our official records while preserving transparency and accountability. I'll safeguard county tax dollars as your comptroller using efficiency and fiscally conservative policies. I'm Jason English, asking for your vote on August 20th. Thank you.
Paid for and approved by Jason English, Republican, Santa Rosa County Clerk of Court and Comptroller.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays, The Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio Pensacola. Oh, man, it's good to be back home. Really. That's a long week. I'm just telling you, that's a long week. You think, you don't have to cook for the family, you don't have all this other stuff. Yeah, I'm just did not get extra sleep last week, and it's exhausting. A lot of walking. Ate good, didn't gain any weight for all the walking and everything else. So I had said, well, I don't know if I'm going to go to the DNC. That kind of got solved for me yesterday, didn't it? Kind of can't not go to the DNC now. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle will be on Capitol Hill today. Lawmakers are going to be demanding answers over the attempt on former President Trump's life. She'll be testifying before the House Oversight Committee. A lot of lawmakers are calling for Cheadle to either step down or be fired. The Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General also investigating the shooting at that rally in Butler, Pennsylvania.
It's impossible to see that she keeps her job.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't believe she's still in her job already.
Well, and then news over the weekend, too, that Secret Service had denied requests for additional resources from Trump's security team, saying there was a lack of resources. So a lot of questions to be answered.
4 years.
Right.
When they had denied that they denied him access to more resources. That was their initial. No, we didn't. We didn't do that. We didn't. Oh, we did that? Did we do that? Yeah, we definitely did that. My God. It's just unbelievable.
And you, when you talked with Chip Simmons and Sheriff Johnson over both of those terrific interviews, there's so much good information on that from their perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, changed my perspective on it. I mean, it gave me permission to believe what was obvious, that it just seems impossible this was pure incompetence.
Yeah, there's just so many coincidences.
You're asking me to suspend disbelief too much to believe that this was pure incompetence. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that today. Anything else, David?
Other than that, Delta Airlines apologizing. Apparently, they still had thousands of canceled flights over the weekend after that security glitch from CrowdStrike on Friday. So
I was lucky. My flight was fine. Southwest wasn't affected. Bobby was on Frontier, and he was all messed up. Like, just trying to get
poor
home.
Poor Bobby.
I was texting with him yesterday. He's like, I'm still trying to get home.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Biden remains at Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, following his decision to leave the race for a second term.
According to the New York Times, he called his two closest advisors, Mike Donilon and Steve Ricchetti, to his Rehoboth Beach house sometime on Saturday afternoon, and they worked through the night drafting the most consequential letter of his 50 years in politics. The next morning, he made three calls to his vice president, his chief of staff, and his campaign manager.
Fox's Jackie Heinrich with the president, who plans to address the nation later this week. The Harris campaign says the vice president raises nearly $50 million for her presidential campaign since yesterday afternoon. She runs the Secret Service, but today Kimberly Cheadle will be grilled by a House Oversight Committee as to how the assassination attempt against former President Trump took place in Butler, Pennsylvania, July 13th. Cheadle says she will not step down. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 75 degrees, partly cloudy skies this morning in Pensacola. Governor Ron DeSantis says Democrats are just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. That from a post on X yesterday after President Biden withdrew from the race and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to succeed him. DeSantis says that Harris was complicit in a massive cover-up to hide and deny the fact that Biden was not capable of discharging the duties of his office. He also said that Harris was the border czar during the worst border crisis in American history. Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried, though, called Biden one of the greatest presidents in American history, and she said that he's turned the economy around and guided the nation out of the pandemic. A Gulf Breeze home reportedly struck by lightning over the weekend. Luckily, though, that damage was minimal. It happened at a home on Chantclair Circle Saturday morning. Nobody was home at the time. A family member did stop by the house later in the day. They said they noticed damage on the chimney and then smelled smoke inside. Firefighters checked the home and the attic. They did find charred wood where the lightning had apparently struck. They say the insulation had been sprayed with a flame retardant material and that prevented further damage. Two motorcyclists were hurt in a crash on Sunday morning. That happened on Sorrento Road near Choctaw Avenue. The Florida Highway Patrol says the two motorcyclists were riding side by side when traffic abruptly slowed. That caused both riders to have to hit their brakes hard, and they crashed into each other. Both riders were taken to local hospitals with non-life-threatening injuries. Rick Scott now taking steps to force President Biden out of office. The Republican senator writing on X that he'll be introducing a resolution this week urging the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment. That amendment allows those in the administration to push for the president's removal. A Milton woman facing charges for allegedly stealing more than $1.3 million from a local electric business. 45-year-old Jessica McKinnon now charged with fraud, larceny, and other charges as well. The Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office says McKinnon worked as a bookkeeper for Paul Patrick Electric Incorporated from 2019 until 2023. During that time, they say she had access to the company's finances. Investigators say she was taking money and shifting it around to other accounts to disguise the stolen money. She was arrested last week and has since been released from jail. 5:34 right now. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be seeing scattered showers and thunderstorms as we go throughout the day today. 70% chance of rain. High today staying a little bit lower than average, near 88 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For your Tuesday, another 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 89. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 76. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 76 degrees in Pensacola, 74 in Gulf Breeze, 75 in Milton. Your next news at 6. We have breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola.
When the open road or off-road calls, the 2024 Subaru Forester answers. Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. The impressive off-road capability of the Forester Wilderness starts with its dependable symmetrical all-wheel drive. It optimizes power distribution between the wheels to deliver maximum traction on challenging trails or in slippery weather conditions. Pair that with 9.2 inches of ground clearance and standard Yokohama Geolander AT all-terrain tires, and you'll feel free to explore even farther down the trail. Plus, the Forester Wilderness comes with a full-size spare, a rare sight these days. The Forester Wilderness makes it easy to load up for adventure with an extra-wide rear gate opening and 60-40 split fold-down rear seat. And its interior protective material stands up to wear and tear from all that gear, passengers, and pets. The Forester Wilderness is built for your boldest adventures. Find yours at Anderson Subaru. Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
NAS Wedding Field is a major training facility for our United States military. It produces more than 1,200 pilots a year and is the home to the largest air wing in the U.S. Navy and produces 100% of all Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard helicopter pilots. But NAS Wedding Field has a lot more to offer and makes a huge impact to our local community. Tune in today at 9 to hear what's happening at NAS Whiting Field on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola is the best place to reach informative, local, and dependable listeners. But did you know you can reach sports fanatics on one of our family of radio stations, ESPN Pensacola? It's our area's top place to reach sports fans.
Hi, my name is Sean Salmon, and I am the owner of Maynard's Donuts and Coffee on Nine Mile with two locations there. The team at ESPN Pensacola has been fantastic to work with, offering us creative and effective advertising solutions that resonate with the local sports community.
To have your business reach sports fans today, call 850-262-6000.
When hurricanes are brewing and heading to the Gulf, tune in to News Radio Pensacola for complete storm coverage you can count on. We have direct reports from the Emergency Management Center and from the National Hurricane Center to give you the latest on the storm's path, strength, and impacts. Stay informed and stay safe with comprehensive hurricane coverage heard on News Radio Pensacola. Now on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and on our News Radio Pensacola mobile app.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your bow.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers!
Light them up.
They ain't gonna sink this battleship, no way.
Verify our range to target. One ping only.
What's the range now?
200 miles, sir.
They break 150 miles, launch the alert 5 aircraft.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? You're slowing down! You're slowing down!
I'm bringing them in closer, Merlin.
You're gonna do what?
I got a good lock. Firing.
It's Pensacola Morning News, and I had a chance recently to talk to this part of our Tenant Command series, where we're getting a chance to meet all of the local commanding officers for the military missions, and there are over 100 of them based at NES Pensacola, Corry Station, Whiting Field. And we had a chance to talk to the commander of the Naval Education Training Command, Admiral, Rear Admiral, that's a two-star, commanding officer Jeff, his call sign is Caesar Cherico. Admiral, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Anybody can see it. It's a United States Navy sweatshirt.
My wife got me this recently, so this is my keep warm in the freezing studio sweatshirt. So
I love it. I'm going to have to wear it out in the 90-degree heat later today, too.
Oh, it's funny, too. When I leave every morning, I have to, like, immediately take it off because it's so hot outside. So first thing, let's talk about this a little bit. Your story is kind of interesting because you are personally heavily invested in the military mission in the United States because you have a couple of kiddos who are in the military, right?
Yeah, I do. So it's a family business in the Cherico family. My wife is a veteran.
Okay.
So we met at the Naval Academy. She was a ship driver and then a meteorologist.
Okay.
And a South Jersey beach girl. So she's home in Pensacola. She
nice.
Loves this place. And then my oldest daughter is a instructor, but she flies MH-60 Romeos out of San Diego. My son, next, is a P-8 Poseidon naval flight officer out of Whidbey. So that's two. There's many more.
And you have, I think, eight kids
and five
in?
I have eight kids, yeah. And then third is Cecilia. She's a Navy nurse married to a Marine. Condolences later. And then Regina is a nuke power, well, in prototype now. She's going submarines, and Rosie's in the basic school for the Marine Corps.
That's fantastic.
And
that's
then
amazing.
Three to go.
And I mean, yeah, and so as a family, heavily invested. So for you to be the commanding officer of NETSI is pretty interesting because, again, the purpose of this whole series is to expose people to what the commands do. You're the only admiral in residence here in the two, not the only admiral, there's lots of retired admirals here, but you're the only active duty admiral in the two-county area. What is Naval Education Training Command?
All right, it's a huge command, as you mentioned earlier, but overall we take the concept, I think, of the bumper sticker would be street to fleet.
Okay.
So NETSI is huge. It's about 70,000 people. And we've got about 600-plus commands underneath us, spans the world.
That's amazing.
It's absolutely huge.
And in terms of, just so people get a picture of it, so much of the Navy is built around the idea that there's a headquarters in one place, but the subordinate command and or training units and or detachments or elements that report to them can be far-flung, and in your case, far-flung across the United States, even internationally, like in Spain, Japan, all over the place,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Everywhere.
And so you're responsible for the training, not all of the training for everything, but it's an enormous variety of training systems to equip sailors to become operational in whatever they get assigned to, right?
Absolutely. So but way, way back in the old days, in the early 70s, CNO had asked for a study, was frustrated about, the Chief of Naval Operations asked for a study, was frustrated about capabilities, equipment, and missions ending up in the fleet without proper training. So they did a big study, and Naval Education and Training Command is a result of that. And there's 17 communities in the Navy. I touch every one of them. I'm held accountable for the individual and technical training, officer and enlisted, Navy-wide.
And some of those subordinate commands are here on NAS Pensacola, and again, some are all over the place. And it's one of those interesting things because people tend to perceive, well, you're the admiral, so you obviously control NAS Pensacola. Well, no, that's Village.
That's Village.
And
I would love to control Village. Village and I go way back.
And weirdly, he doesn't report to you, and you don't report to him.
He answers my phone calls.
Well, I would think that's true. Yeah, I would think that's true. We're talking to Rear Admiral Jeff Cherico. Caesar's his call sign. We'll talk to him a little bit more in just a second. Back to Admiral Cherico. So instead of itemizing all the training elements that you do oversee, right, I think it might actually be more useful to think of all the training in the Navy minus the things you don't oversee.
Right.
What are a couple of the things that you don't specifically oversee? Training for air. That's NATSE, right?
Sinatra.
Yep, sorry.
Sinatra under Admiral Snap.
Can I sidebar? NATSE, CNAT.
It's all part of
ROTC,
the test.
NASC, NETSAFA. The acronyms are overwhelming.
It's Navy specialty.
But yeah, Sinatra oversees the Chief of Naval Air Training.
Yes.
So outside of air, which you don't oversee, airplanes, except for Schools Command, which is the first step, and that's Redman, and you oversee him. But other elements that you don't oversee?
Navy Nuclear Power Training Command, so the initial foray into the education for the submarine and surface nuke force up in Charleston and a prototype. After that, I've got the submarine and surface nuke force. SEAL, BUDS training, they own that. And then I pick up the leadership training for them on the backside.
Okay.
And then the last one is Hospital Corpsman. It's really joint training out in Texas. But again, we pick them up for their in-stride training. So Everything.
So literally everything training other than those things.
There's no training to command something this big. That's what I learned after like the first week.
And it's been your year in the job. So I'm sure the learning curve was steep.
Yes.
To become familiar with all of these various elements. So let's talk about some of them. You actually have a couple of flag officers who are subordinate to you.
I do.
Who report to you. One stars, I assume.
I got a,
And a two star, I think.
It's an interesting story, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three, right? You have three admirals report to you?
Three admirals, yeah.
Okay, and what do they oversee?
Okay, so I've got a deputy. He's a reservist. It's Rob Nowakowski, and he, you know, acts in my stead when he's drilling. And then I've got Admiral Craig Mattingly at Naval Service Training Command. Think all accession training.
Okay.
So for sailor or officer. And then I've got Rear Admiral Jim Waters, recently put in as the two-star now.
Okay.
Working at Navy Recruiting Command. Navy recruiting was struggling. We are killing it now.
It's been
awesome.
And that's one of the ones that, you know, kind of even I for 10 years interviewing admirals and talking about NATSE and the important role that you occupy here at the base, I hadn't been aware that recruiting was one of your subordinate commands. So the entire world of Navy recruiting falls under your responsibility, which historically recently has been a significant challenge. As I understand it, other than rescue swimming is doing great right now. Is that basically
In general, I would say we call it the Warrior Challenge group, like the SEALs, special small combat craft. In general, we are killing it. As we move down the line and look at our next challenge, Warrior Challenge, so our high quality rates like those need some attention. But looks like we're going to make our recruiting mission this year, which is significant considering the turnaround over the last year. If I could throw a number at you.
Please
you
do.
Mind. 2022, we recruited about 22,000 people. In 23, we recruited 30,700. In 24, we're about to hit 40,600.
Oh, my God.
And then I've asked the CNO, the Chief of Naval Operations, to maintain that load for at least the next 3 years.
I mean, I did not know the numbers were that good.
Hear people say we're missing.
Right.
So where we are missing, I cannot ship everybody to boot camp by the end of the year.
Oh, because you're at capacity
at
boot camp.
Yeah,
okay.
A single boot camp.
And that's one of the things, maybe just to help people wrap their minds around what NETSI does,
is
I think of you as basically the labor force production for the Navy, because you know, you can't just take a sailor and say, you know, here, go do this on the ship or whatever. They have to be trained. And so your job is to produce the human resource to recruit and then train and then get them into the position they need to be so that they can do the job of somebody else who's either moving up or moving out or hasn't been filled in a while. And so, you know, obviously, when you're running a factory, you have an assembly line full of parts, okay? And those parts have to arrive in time for you to assemble let's say it's a vehicle. But you are like the human parts for the massively intricate and complex system that is the United States Navy.
Absolutely. So we call it the supply chain, but we don't treat our human beings as commodities.
Right.
Right. They're all human beings. And you can retain more people who are in the Navy, but eventually you have to recruit. And just, you know, philosophically, I look at the Navy. Most commands have between 3 and 5 years with an individual. So if you just do the math, you're losing between 20 and 33% of your workforce every year.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to build that production line in of whole and competent sailors to be able to step right in and do things like what they're doing in the Red Sea right now.
And running into that capacity issue is a challenge, too, because
Absolutely.
If you've been adapted to running low or short, and now all of a sudden you've been very successful at the thing you needed to do, but almost you've got too much.
We're the dog that caught the car at the end of the driveway.
Right. I love that. Yeah. So aside from recruiting, which is, again, one of your key subordinate commands, what are some of the other major elements of what you oversee in terms of training?
Okay, so basic military training or recruit training command up at Great Lakes. If you ever get the chance to go up there,
it's a boot camp.
Got to go, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then we talk individual and technical training. There's 86 specific jobs in the United States Navy. And we cover down on all those schoolhouses.
Okay.
So we typically call them A school or C school. C school is a more advanced course.
Okay.
And as they roll through that, so every one of those rates in the United States Navy, the more fun, in my opinion, is the in-stride training that comes back out. I've got Navy Leadership and Ethics Command up in Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay.
Where we take every prospective commander at every level, and they get saturated with ethics training, practical training, anecdotal discussions where they really start learning through telling stories about how to navigate the complexities of service in the United States Navy.
And I think, again, speaking from my own perspective, which I got to assume is what other people think, is the idea that you have to actually have a training course for commanding officers,
yes,
might be surprising, because people might assume, well, look, if they get to that rank, let's say captain rank, okay, and they've got a significant command, well, just by being in the Navy all these years and dealing with people and solving problems, surely they know how to command. And your answer is, well, okay, yes, but we can do a lot better if we have a professional standardized system of equipping them for the particular challenges that that's going to carry, right?
Absolutely. Having a standard, maintaining the standard's important. I've been through all of those courses, mm-hmm, and commanded. I think this is my fifth command. I have learned more from sitting with my classmates and listening to those who come before tell us their stories. And again, if you can use that 20 to 30% attrition or turnover, you know, this is the first time in this job for me.
Yeah.
And every time you're a commander, it's the first time in that job.
And then just one last quick thing, and I knew we would run completely out of time before we really got to too much of what you do. We are almost out, totally out of time. Is you guys have been working on, and you've been working on, a process of delivering remote training. You know,
yes,
COVID forced the Navy to adapt, as everybody, but it also gave you opportunities where maybe challenging that traditional assumption that you got to be in a classroom, in a building, somewhere on a base learning, where maybe instead we could have you in your bunk, you know, on the ship, learning the skills you need, or, you know, honing the skills you need for your current or perhaps your next assignment, and one-on-one through digital, you know, resources instead of in a classroom somewhere, which can be much more expensive and time costly, and you lose them from their active duty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you think about it, if you're curious about something or you have a task at hand, you should be able to look it up and figure it out. You know, I have a really interesting looking 23-year-old Cherokee that you might see driving around town.
Okay.
I'm on YouTube looking how to fix that.
Right.
We want that same principle, natural curiosity, but the knowledge at your fingertips so that you can really become proficient or at least have great, we call it first pass yield. Hey, I had this task. I know how to do this task. I've done it, and we can get back in the fight.
Well, Admiral Cherico, like I said, I knew we'd totally run out of time, but commanding officer of NETC Naval Education Training Command. He is a two-star admiral. That position is always a two-star admiral.
Yes.
Historically, it's a three-year tour, so he'll be with us for another 2 years, located on the base. And, thank you for sharing with us. Thank you for taking over this massive task of training for the Navy. Congratulations on the numbers that somewhat predate you, but also show even better improvement while you've been,
yes,
on the job for the last year. Admiral Cherico, thanks for the time, and best of luck in continuing this vital mission for the Navy.
Thank you, and thanks for having me in your house, and again, don't take that sweatshirt off.
Absolutely. When he was talking, I was wearing a Navy sweatshirt at the time, so that's what that was all about. 5:52 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Peden Air Conditioning, Heating, Electric, Plumbing, they take care of it all. They have been doing it for 55 years here in Pensacola. Of course, their location in Ellison Field. They have recently been expanding all the way east to Tallahassee. So everywhere between here and Tallahassee, you can call on Peden. And then west to Baldwin County and then to Mobile County, like last year and then this year, they expanded all the way to Mobile. So they are available anywhere along the Gulf Coast. Professional service, show up, do it right the first time. Stand by the results, 100% satisfaction guarantee. And right now, there is no service fee with air conditioning repairs, so they'll waive the service fee, and $55 off those repairs. And then if you decide to replace instead of repair, $555 off a full system replacement because it is their 55th anniversary. Peden Air Conditioning, Heating, Electrical, and Plumbing, PEADEN.com.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, happens each Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite band. This Tuesday, it's Stormfolk. They're an alternative folk band that combines a singer-songwriter feel with folk, bluegrass, rock, and pop. Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7 with Stormfolk. Remember, no pets or glass allowed.
If you're a firearm enthusiast and you're looking to add performance to your firearm, you need to check out Jim's Firearms. Whether it's for competition, hunting, or home defense, Jim's Firearms has got you covered. Customize your firearm with lights, lasers, optics, sights, grips, or suppressors. Make it uniquely yours. Visit Jim's Firearms at the corner of Blue Angel and Sorrento near the back gate of NAS, or find them online at jimsfirearms.net. Jim's Firearms, your one-stop shop for all your firearm needs and your source for specialty firearms.
I'm Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. With 1,600 acres of land, the University of West Florida is the third largest campus in the state university system. With this amount of space comes a wealth of resources for students, staff, and community members to enjoy the natural spaces our campus has to offer. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we discuss new nature-based experiences on the UWF campus and the ways we are connecting our community to our natural area. That's Thursday at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Come quietly or there will be trouble.
Good morning, 5:55, News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to be back here behind the microphone, standing in a comfortable, familiar position instead of in a hotel room in the suburbs of Milwaukee, which was very, very interesting and very, very tiring, and I'm glad to be home. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, some reaction from Joe Biden's family members here after the news yesterday. Hunter Biden praising his father after his decision to end his campaign. In a statement, Hunter Biden said that President Biden is, quote, unique in public life today in that there is no distance between Joe Biden, the man, and Joe Biden, the public servant of the last 54 years. And a spokesperson for Jill Biden.
What does that mean?
I'm not really sure.
Because as you read it, John can attest that I'm sitting here with this confused look on my face thinking, well, at first it sounds like what he's saying is that the Joe you know and the Joe I know are the same person. But read it again.
All right. Let's see here. We're unique in public life today in that there is no distance between the Joe Biden, the man, and Joe Biden, the public servant of the last 54 years.
Okay, so I think what he's trying to say is there's no difference between Joe Biden in private life.
Right, the Joe Biden
Joe
you
Biden
see
in
is
public
the Joe
life.
Biden I see.
Okay, yeah. But boy, he did a terrible job of saying that. Go on.
And Jill Biden's quote, down to the last hours of the decision only he could make, she was supportive of whatever road he chose. And that was from a spokesperson for Jill Biden.
All right.
So the CDC saying that two people have died due to a listeria outbreak in multiple states connected to deli meat. The CDC says 28 people have been hospitalized from this. And
by the way, not here. Georgia is the closest sickening. New York seems to be right. the main location for it. And I went grocery shopping on Friday and bought a bunch of deli meat, and I come home, I see this store, I'm like, what the? So I'm now waiting on the follow-up because the CDC, I'm assuming, you know, everybody's home for the weekend. Today is going to come out with more information about where it is. Seems to be, it is fresh sliced meats. It is not packaged meats. And it is like ham is one of the meats. I think turkey was one of the meats. But it was very general. They didn't know where it had come from. They didn't know who the suppliers or the distributors or anything. But it was at grocery delis kind of places. So we're waiting on better information at this point.
Absolutely.
They do say, I didn't know this, that if you just cook the meat again, it'll kill the listeria. But who wants to cook their sliced ham again? That seems weird. But okay.
And did you see the WNBA All-Star game?
No.
Well, no, neither did anybody else. But still, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese helped Team WNBA pull out an upset over Team USA in that game. The best female basketball players in the world were in Phoenix for the game on Saturday night. Clark, Reese, and Arike Ogunbowale beat Nicely the U.S. done. Olympic team 117-109.
Okay. Yep. There you go. That's what I know. It's basketball, though, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Just kidding. I do know what the I was trying to think if I have ever watched a WNBA game. The answer is no. I might have seen just clips like ESPN SportsCenter or something like that from since, especially since, you know, Caitlin Clark is now in the NBA, WNBA, but nope.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.